Hello and welcome to Thursday, October 29th edition of Juno Afternoon. We've got a great show. We will be chatting with Justice Deborah O'Gara about her new position with the tribal court. Kathleen McFerrin and Jaron Finkelstein, the Evening of Egan Stars of Tomorrow's presentation, will present a nonviolent workshop this weekend. Dave Hunsacker will be here to talk about the not-so-silent film, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The chairman of the Menominee tribe says the destruction of the tribe's industrial hemp crop by drug enforcement agents was both unnecessary and unjustified. The tribe plans to ask a federal judge to rule on the legality of its plan to grow hemp under a provision in the Farm Bill. Gilman Halstead reports.
In a surprise raid last Friday, agents of the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration used bulldozers to destroy 30,000 hemp plants on the tribe's reservation in northeastern Wisconsin. The raid followed months of face-to-face negotiations between the tribe and federal officials about whether the tribe could legally grow hemp. Tribal Chair Gary Bisaw says the tribe was waiting for results of tests to determine whether the THC levels in the plants qualified them as hemp and not marijuana.
Only intended to grow industrial hemp. We felt we were within the Farm Bill, and we had been fully cooperative with the Department of Justice through the whole process.
Bisaw says before the raid, the tribe had agreed to destroy any plants that contained too much THC and had invited federal officials to witness the process. In documents released following the raid, the DEA says tests proved the plants were not hemp, but rather high-grade marijuana. Bisaw says the tribe still hasn't seen the test results. He says the next logical step is to take the dispute to court.
We believe we are compliant with the 2014 Farm Bill. And for us to move forward with a guarantee of no federal interference, we would ask that we have that declaratory judgment in place.
The Farm Bill allows states and some tribes that have legalized hemp production to grow the crop for research purposes. Department of Justice officials in Wisconsin have declined to comment, except to point to the affidavit that led to last week's raid, which makes no reference to the negotiations with the tribe that began in July. I'm Gilman Halstead in Wisconsin.
The public comment period ends Friday on a bison plan for South Dakota's Badlands National Park. Jim Ken spoke with park personnel about the current management plan and what changes may lie ahead.
The North Unit Bison Resource Management Plan calls for expanding the area where the Badlands Park bison herd currently grazes. After a series of public scoping meetings on the topic in 2013, two plans have been presented. One calls for expanding the current bison range to 82,000 acres, allowing more opportunities for visitors to interact with bison from a distance. The second plan calls for leaving the current range in the relatively isolated Sage Creek unit. Badlands wildlife biologist Eddie Childers says although some park neighbors are supportive of the proposed expansion of the bison range, others have expressed concerns.
Bison escapes and fencing and being able to maintain the fence, so in these alternatives we're taking a good hard look.
Childers says there have been incidents of bison escaping their current range through both natural barriers and the fence line, but they've always been recovered. Members of the public may offer comment on the plan by email through the Badlands National Park website, by postal mail, or by stopping by the park. About 600 bison are maintained in the park after several hundred are culled each year to Native American tribes across the country through the Intertribal Bison Council. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
This week, New Mexico's congressional delegation announced the Pueblo of Laguna is set to receive $1 million to help complete a network of bike and pedestrian routes. The grant, awarded through a U.S. Department of Transportation program, will fund construction of the project. The routes will connect the Pueblo's six villages and provide links to adjacent county communities. Paths will help people access places of employment, education, and services while promoting health and fitness. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support provided by Shoshone Bannock Tribal Farms, proud producer of free-range, sustainable buffalo jerky, holiday delivery of original, peppered, and teriyaki buffalo jerky available on orders placed by December 15th. More information at sbtribalfarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 5 minutes past the hour. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO in downtown Juneau, Alaska. The weather right now is rain showers. Tonight, more rain showers, lows around 42. Tomorrow, rain showers high 41 to 45. And tomorrow night, numerous rain showers, lows 36 to 39. And then on Saturday, Halloween, scattered rain showers in the morning and then decreasing clouds, highs around 44. Northwest wind 15, lows around 37. Who knows, maybe Juneau will have a rainless Halloween night. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of Juneau Afternoon. I am Joan Pardis, your Thursday host, and our first guest is Judge O'Gara. She has just been hired as the tribal court proceeding judge. She's been involved with the court for quite a while. She was chief justice from 2012 to 2015 and magistrate 2007 through 2010. She grew up in the Seattle area and spent summers up in Mountain Village, where her mom was born and raised. She's been in Juneau for quite a while. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joan.
So let's talk about your new job as the tribal court proceeding judge. What does that involve?
Well, the presiding judge basically manages the court staff and all of our activities, as well as hears cases. Primarily, the cases that we hear are first the child support and paternity cases, which we have been doing since 2007. So those really are the bulk of our cases are parents who are looking to get child support orders and then get enforcement of those orders.
Okay.
We've also in the last 5 years branched out to do custody, child divorces, guardianship, adoptions, and domestic violence protection orders, which has been really, really important for us to do, primarily just to complement what the state court, Superior Court, is already doing here in Juneau, but being able to provide that protection to folks who are experiencing violence in their home.
Okay. We were chatting we were on the air, and just curious. Let's start with the very basics. Mm-hmm. So what is the difference between tribal court and district and federal courts?
Well, it's just a different – the tribe is a different jurisdiction, just like the state of Alaska is a different jurisdiction than the state of Washington. So we are a sovereign nation we just happen to be in the state of Alaska. So we have our own court system. We have our own jurisdiction that folks that are able to come in and use our services. For the cases that we do, which primarily deals with children, however, we can see a broad range of folks coming in. If you are a parent of children who happen to be enrolled or eligible for enrollment in our tribe, Central Council Tlingit Haida, Indian Tribes of Alaska, then you can come in and use our court. Same with the domestic violence protection orders or custody. It normally just takes one person, or the children need to be eligible for enrollment in the tribe. So our first priority is to take care of the judicial services that our tribal members need. And that expands out to children and families because most of our families are mixed. They're not all 100% Native. And so we are able to do much the same as what the state courts are doing over just across the hill from us, that in the areas that we do. The one difference I think that we don't do is criminal cases. We don't have a prosecutor, and we don't have any criminal laws that we can enforce, though we could if we had the funds to do that. We just haven't chosen to do that. Though we are looking at working collaboratively with the state court to do some kind of what's called sentencing circles and assist the Superior Court or the District Court in making sentencing recommendations for those folks who have either been found guilty or have pled guilty to crimes. And we're still at the talking stage of that, but we're looking forward to in the next year to 2 years to really implement that.
Yeah, that sounds great, more of a collaboration. But also we were chatting about, what are your goals? You were just talking about that's one of your goals in the next 2 years, to have a more concrete collaboration with the district or superior courts. What are your other goals since you've just been newly elected to this position? I'm sure you have some ideas of where you want to go.
I think probably my primary goal is to strive to make the court as accessible as possible to all of our members throughout Southeast Alaska. Not just here in Juneau, but throughout Southeast Alaska, and wherever our members might be or their families might be, and provide services to the best of our funding ability. I mean, we've right now only have 2 employees in the court. We've got 2 more that are currently being hired or recruited, and the 2 that we're just recruiting now are going to actually concentrate on building up some services for juvenile offenders or juveniles who are either currently in trouble, legal trouble with doing things that they shouldn't be doing, or are at risk of getting into the criminal justice system. So we want to do some programs in our court that will help to keep them out of, either keep them out or get them out of the criminal justice system.
That sounds wonderful. You said that right now you're a staff of 2 and you're going to hire another 2. Yeah. How many cases do you see?
You know, I think we have, I didn't quite prepare for numbers, but I think we have about 600 open child support cases right now. And we have anywhere from 2 or 3 dozen to 50 other types of cases that get opened throughout the year.
That seems like quite a large workload. Is that true? I mean, I'm not really familiar with what you do. It seems like a lot for 2 people.
Well, it's actually, I think we still have room to grow, though. I really do think that having the court accessible and having it open, you know, for hearings at least 3 days a week is a goal that I've got, and I think the numbers of cases are going to increase. And whether we have cases or not, the other thing that I'm really looking forward to is working with the juveniles, and that may not be an actual hearing. It might just be making the courtroom available to have kids come in and work with other adults who are part of another program in the tribe. So working with other, we've got a lot of programs in the tribe that are going to be beneficial and really collaborating with some of the services that we already have.
That sounds really, really wonderful, and it probably will be very powerful. Let's talk about the grants that can support that. One grant is just ending up and another one is about to begin. Is that true?
Yeah, the grant that we just finished and just closed out actually a couple of weeks ago was through the Department of Justice, and it the main goal of that one was to establish a public safety court. And what it did is allowed us to actually write statutes, procedures, and draft up some orders so that we could both hear and issue domestic violence protection orders. And we got a great recognition of our court through the Attorney General just a few months ago, who actually not only recognized our court orders, but also said we don't have to, state law enforcement were instructed to actually enforce those orders without us having to go through the state court for those orders to be recognized. So I thought that was really good. And that process or that activity is going to continue even though the grant ended. We have all the procedures up and running now and
it's a sustainable program.
It's a very sustainable program. So we're going to continue doing that and working with the not just the state court, but the other domestic violence organizations throughout Southeast to help make it safer for folks who are experiencing violence. The new grant that we just got is also through the Department of Justice, and it's, as I said, aimed at looking for alternative alternative programs for kids who are already in the criminal justice system, something short of jail. Statistics show that kids that are being put into jail or even on probation, if they're not given more activities that will steer them away from bad choices and into good choices, they're going to end up over at Lemon Creek or federal prison or state prison somewhere. And we want to catch those kids, both the ones that are currently in trouble, and we want to start identifying some kids who might or who are at risk of getting into trouble and steering them into programs and activities that will keep them out of trouble.
Right. Steering them through that gauntlet of maybe being at risk or a first offender, and then how do you turn it around. So you'll be working with Central Council with that.
So, and I'm looking forward to, I mean, we're not the only kids on the block in that one. There's a number of organizations with the schools, with the state, with the tribe, who are working with kids, and it's really a matter of just pulling everybody together and seeing what we can do to do this together. So I'm not looking at doing this all by ourselves, just
no,
the court.
It definitely sounds like a collaboration.
There's already a lot of activities, so what can the court do to support those?
Right, help identify or
absolutely
be involved or use the courtroom, what you were saying,
right,
for workshops or so on and so forth, or programs.
Absolutely.
If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Judge O'Gara. She was just hired as a tribal court proceeding judge here in Juneau. And and if you have been listening, if you haven't just joined us, her passion is, it seems, to work with kids, you know, to either prevent or help turn around people who are just entering that court system and keeping families together and safe. So we're kind of out of time at the moment. It's 17 minutes after the hour, but I wanted to thank you, Judge O'Gara, for all that you've done for our community. And it sounds like you're really committed to collaborating with
absolutely partners. I know I didn't get to say everything that I wanted to say. I mean, I'm really passionate about the fact that we're going to start taking child welfare cases also and bringing some of those families into our court as well. And that's going to be really important. We'll be doing that around the first of the year.
Okay, great. Well, come back anytime.
Thank you.
And we can talk about what's going on in the court. All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The other night I took a ride with little old Lucy Brown. We went to all the honky-tonks. We really got around. She's 5'2" with eyes of blue and pretty as a queen. I didn't know her pop was a city cop, and she was just 15. Good morning, Judge. Why do you look so mean, sir? And Mr. Judge, what can the charges be? If there's been trouble, I will plead not guilty. It must be someone else. You know it can't be me. I filed my income tax return. Thought I'd save some dough. I cheated just a little bit. I knew they'd never know. I got some money back this year, like I always do. They'll have to catch me before I pay Internal Revenue. Good morning, Judge. Why do you look so mean, sir? And Mr. Judge, what can the charges be? If there's been trouble, I will plead not guilty. It must be someone else. You know it can't be me. Separated just the other day. Last thing that she said to me was, brother, you will pay. She said I'd pay her every week. I'd better never fail. I said before I send you a dime, I'll die right here in jail. Good morning, Judge. Why do you look so mean, sir? And Mr. Judge, what can the charges be? If there's been trouble, I will plead not guilty. It must be someone else. You know it can't be me.
It's 20 after the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Right now, 47 at the airport. Downtown weather is 46, as same as Mendenhall Valley. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, and our next segment of our show is with the people who will be at Evening at Egan tomorrow. It is a presentation called Strengthening the Spirit of Collaboration. It is about nonviolent communication. So the weekend kicks off with Evening at Egan at 7 o'clock, which is always free and fascinating. The two F's, free and fascinating. And then they go right into a weekend workshop. It is Saturday 9 to 4 and Sunday from 1 to 5. And that also takes place at Egan. And our guests are Kathleen McFerrin, Jared Finkelstein, both certified trainers of the nonviolent communication, and then Darcy Lockhart, who is their organizer here in Juneau for the event. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You guys have been to Juneau before, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay. How many times?
I think this is about my fourth year coming up here.
And have you been here before?
I was fortunate enough to be here last year, which was my first, and this is my second year.
Okay, great. So let's start at the very beginning. What is nonviolent communication?
Kathleen?
So that is such a great question. I never really know how to answer it. For me, it's sort of an orientation of how I want to live. And so it gets me in alignment with my values of what's important to me, and then trying to line up my thinking, my words, my actions to come from that place. And it just helps strengthen the connections between people within myself, and also how do we make systems and structures in our society that really help people thrive.
Okay.
I'd love to add, too. It was developed by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg, and so I like to think of nonviolent communication as Marshall's art. And it's like a martial art. It's a practice. It's a place I can put my awareness to give myself focus and for the purpose of creating the kind of connections and relationships that I want.
Sounds great. Before we get into what the lecture will be like and the actual workshop, you're both trainers. So first you discovered it, then you participated, then you became instructors. How have your lives changed by committing to a certain way of life, if that's correct? Mm-hmm. So we'll start with Jared this time, since we start with Kathleen.
I think for a lot of people, when they first discover the practice of nonviolent communication, it was certainly my case, it was like a real moment of coming home. Like suddenly, as I was first exposed to it by Marshall himself, and there was a way he was articulating this practice that it felt like someone was giving language to something that intuitively I'd always known or felt, and finally here it was being articulated in a way that just resonated. And so it was immediately compelling as something I wanted to learn more about, and as is often the case when one wants to learn something, a great way of integrating it is to begin to teach it, and that's how I sort of transitioned from being a practitioner to an instructor. And then at some point the two sort of merged, and now it's like the difference between living it and instructing it and just trying to maintain this orientation towards life have all sort of become the same.
Okay, and how has it changed you from, I don't want to say from point A to point B because it's a lot more fluid than that, but so that was the discovery of it and the commitment to it, but how has your worldview or anything really changed?
Well, like I said, it resonated so deeply when I first encountered it. It was sort of like returning home. So in some ways, it was like reverting back to a place that I had never wanted to leave in the first place, an orientation towards life that was open-hearted. But more practically, I would just say that I find in times of stress or in moments of conflict or in disconnect with myself or with other people that there's a lot more reservoirs of patience and compassion and choice that I have access to thanks to this practice. And I think that's a journey that will continue. I likened it to a martial art before. It's something that you continue to get better at the more you do it. And by better, it just means deeper self-knowing, deeper self-connection, more patience, more love in the heart.
Did you have to unlearn anything?
I had to unlearn most of my cultural habits, yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly the most obvious first one is my habit of jumping to conclusions and jumping to judgments of people or of myself. Concepts around rightness and wrongness and good and bad and appropriate and inappropriate. As a practice, nonviolent communication really invites inquiry into those assumptions and what lies underneath that.
That could be very powerful. Sounds like that's what I heard. But if you're just joining us, that was Jared Finkelstein. He is one of two trainers here for a weekend workshop and the evening at Egan. Kathleen McFerrin is the other trainer. And so how has nonviolent communication impacted your life? You made a commitment. You became a trainer. You've been a trainer for 13 years.
Yeah, so like 13. And I love that question, and it is layered and complicated, and so much like Jared, there was a sense of coming home. And for me, I think about it stripping away all the pieces, the habitual pieces I've learned about my opinions and thinking, and just being able to see our common humanity. And so it's getting back to my own authenticity. And my journey really took me through, I remember when I was a public school teacher, and the students would always come up, Miss McFerrin, are you a Christian? Are you Hindu? Are you Jew? And I would just say, if you want to know what I believe, watch what I do. Because I had really given up on words by then. And then I had heard Marshall Rosenberg talk, and I went, that's it. Maybe there is a way that we can cross cultures and cross boundaries with language as well as actions. And then I was a music conductor for 20 years. It's another way of creating harmony in the world and bringing back the richness of each person fully showing up and playing their own instrument, and yet we're collaborating in this amazing way in an orchestra. And that, again, was an incredible experience, and yet now doing this work, I could just show up with myself and create, help support collaboration in within families, within businesses, within organizations. And at the level of legislature, I work in prisons a fair amount, too, so a judicial system, I really have a dream now and some actual specific tools to help support creating structures and processes that I think will help us come together and actually create more of a world that works for all people.
Wow. So let's talk about Friday and then the weekend, okay? So that was the background of a little soundbite about what nonviolent communication is, and then the instructor's journey and how it's impacted their lives and their view of the world view and also a vision of the future, which was really quite beautiful. So the lecture tomorrow night, evening at evening, strengthening the spirit of collaboration. It's at 7:00. What can people expect? What is that chat going to be about?
Well, hopefully it'll be a little more than chat. We're really looking for some sort of engagement and some a little bit of participation, and mainly exploring some of the groundwork of what's our common ground and what is it that we can be inspired. How do we create power with each other rather than power over each other? And what does interconnection look like? And just kind of an overview of some of the possibilities of what might happen, and introducing a few of the, I hate to call them tools. It's more like an orientation for me, or practices, maybe. Mm-hmm. Introducing a bit of that, even though it's a short night, and then for the weekend, I imagine really diving into what are some of those specific practices and getting our feet wet, our hands wet, and trying them out with each other, and asking everybody to bring their own particular challenging situations. We can work with those.
Okay. So the evening at Egan, it's a participation. It's not only a lecture. It'll be an overview and some exercises or some
activities. Some interaction.
Right. Okay.
Role play.
And then you go right into the workshop. And the workshop is out at Egan, and there's a fee for the workshop. Do you want to talk, Darcy, about some of the nuts and bolts of that?
Yeah. The workshop is oriented to be a two-day workshop. And so if you come both days, it's $135 plus sales tax. And we can also come for just Saturday, which is $100. But you can't just come Sunday. You know, it has to be, we want continuity and
foundational. Saturday's a foundational piece.
Yeah, exactly. And it will be in the Glacier View Room in the library building starting at 9:00 on Saturday.
Okay. And Jared, you were talking about that it's a practice. So, and we also chatted a little bit about it's about unlearning. And for Kathleen, it was being reminded that the power of words, because you had given up on words, or the power of good words.
Yeah.
Without too
words
much
and actions in alignment.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you have any, if you don't have any experience at all in nonviolent communication, what I'm hearing is it would be good to go get your feet wet on Friday night, see if it's for you, and then you could jump in, or just jump in and learn something new and figure out if it's right for you. What if you have some experience? Is this just a beginner's? I mean, because you've been coming up, you're going to see a lot of the same people, or how does it really work? Are there different levels of it?
Well, first of all, I just love seeing people come back time and time again because I enjoy the connections I make with people, and so that continuity is really important to me. Again, nonviolent communication, as I hold it, really is a practice. And so, you know, like yoga, make sure there's an introduction to yoga, then there's maybe beginner's yoga, and then there's advanced yoga. But in the end, you're moving your body into positions and stretching yourself for the purpose of health and well-being and all of that. And so the workshops that we'll be offering are really for anyone at any level, because it's an opportunity to come back and stretch your practice and continue to go deeper and become more healthy and more centered and more able to connect with yourself and others in the kind of manner that you enjoy.
That sounds great. So, Darcy, is there some information on the web about this?
There is not. If people are interested, they can call me. My number is 523-6010, or they can email me at darcyl, which is darcyl, at gci.net.
Okay. And then, of course, they could show up at 7 o'clock at evening at Egan. It's for the lecture. And then it starts 9 a.m. on Saturday at the Glacier Room on the campus. So thank you so much for coming and suffering through my questions.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 29th of October, 2015. It's the birthday of the editor of the New Yorker magazine, David Remnick, born in Hackensack, New Jersey, 1958. Worked as a sports reporter for the Washington Post, then as their Moscow correspondent, when he witnessed the collapse of the Soviet Union, from which he wrote a book, Lenin's Tomb, The Last Days of the Soviet Empire, came out in 1993, by which time he'd begun as a staff writer at the New Yorker. It's the birthday of James Boswell, born Edinburgh, 1740. Family insisted that he go to law school. His father was a judge, so he did. He passed the bar exams, but didn't care for the practice of law, didn't really care for Scotland, wanted to be in London, wanted to meet the rich and the famous. So he did. He met Voltaire and Rousseau, Oliver Goldsmith, and then he met Samuel Johnson. He was just 22 years old. And Samuel Johnson, the great man of letters, was Boswell's idol. Johnson was 53. They soon became friends, and over the next 20 years, Boswell followed Johnson around, always took notes, wrote down what he had to say. And in 1791, he came out with The Life of Samuel Johnson. There'd never been a biography quite like it before. It was full of personal anecdotes and vivid descriptions. It was fun to read, and he made Samuel Johnson sound like a real person. Still considered one of the great biographies, and it's one reason why Samuel Johnson, Dr. Johnson, is still so famous today. And it's the birthday of the quilt maker Harriet Powers, born into slavery outside Athens, Georgia, 1837, famous for the quilts that she made, which told a story sort of like a graphic novel, such as her Bible quilt of 1886, which now hangs in the Smithsonian, and her pictorial quilt of 1888, displayed in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. Here's a poem for today by Claire Keyes, entitled You Should Avoid Young Children. Because They fill their diapers with reliable ease, sitting on your lap or spread out on your best mattress. Guilt is as foreign to them as Vichyssoise, because they spread sticky fingers over the piano keys, looking for you to hoist them onto your lap. They slam the ivories for the racket they can make. Rethink your nap. Because they are blank slates on which so much waits to be written, their eyes opened wide to take everything in, including the lines around your eyes, the pouches under your chin. Because they manipulate the controls on the TV, finger the holes in the electric socket, stomp the cat's switching tail, only to smile and gaze at you as if you held the keys to joy. Because you can embrace them, but you can't bind them, because they have nothing to give you and everything, because something loosens when they come around, something opens you didn't know was shut. A poem by Claire Keyes, You Should Avoid Young Children, from her collection What Diamonds Can Do, published by Cherry Grove Collections and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Produced by Joy Biles with Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Alaska's regions are unique. Find out what makes Southeast Alaska tick on Forum at 360 November 4th. Raincoast Data's Milani Shivens will present critical insights into economic and socioeconomic trends, population and employment changes, and key economic drivers like the seafood, mining, and tourism industries. That's Forum at 360, Southeast Alaska by the numbers. Wednesday, November 4th at KTOO. Doors open at 5. Show starts at 5:30. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. It is October 29th and almost 20 minutes to the hour. Jeff Brown is the producer of Juneau Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And our next guests are Colette Costa and Dave Hunsacker. So Colette is one of her many things she does in Juneau is she runs the Goldtown Nickelodeon. She's brought an independent, she's running the independent art film. Yay!
We like to say we're running it right into the ground.
Ah, yes. She's modest. And Dave Hunsaker is a local playwright, screenwriter, and welcome to the show. And they're here to talk about the not-so-silent film. And
super psyched about it.
Let's talk about it.
Super psyched about it.
Hunchback.
Yeah, and every time we do one of these, I'm like, oh, this is the best one we've ever done. Oh, this is the best one we've ever done. And I have to come up with a new rating system. Other than that,
maybe they just keep getting better.
Mm-hmm. You know what it is? They keep 99% of the time keep staying as awesome as they are, which is, I have to say, hard to do. So this time we're doing The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's a 1923 movie starring Lon Chaney, directed by not Lon Chaney. Although the doc I said basically said he hired his friend to direct it, and then he directed the whole thing. So he was kind of like that. And it is a phenomenal film, and Dave here has been, and Banghart, Bob Banghart, and Clay Good, Jay Caputo, and Robin Walls are doing live music for it, and I have a small idea of what they've been doing, but I'm trying to save myself.
We only also have a small idea of what we're doing, but we're closing in on it, and we're pretty excited about it. We're starting with medieval music, so the music is from the time. I mean, one of the wonderful things about this film is how incredibly accurate and gorgeous the sets and costumes are. They essentially recreated Paris, including the Notre Dame Cathedral, in full scale on the Universal lot, and it's amazing. So we wanted music to kind of match that. At the same time, we're going to be doing a lot of improvisation based on this medieval music. So we have a very, 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 very large bell that Clay is going to hit with a hammer.
We've commissioned a bell.
That is the hunchback. Okay, let's start at the beginning. The Not So Silent Film series is a silent film with a live orchestra, musicians, and a bell that is counted as the sixth person, kind of. And they play music to the film.
Correct. They play a live soundtrack.
Okay.
Sometimes including Foley, which is sound effects into it as well. Depends on what the band is comfortable with and what the movie calls for.
Okay. And this is Friday night and Sunday?
This will be tomorrow. I can't believe it. Friday tomorrow at 7 p.m. Saturday at 5 p.m.
Sunday.
Forget Saturday. There's other stuff going on. Sunday, 5 p.m., 7:30 p.m.
Okay. So, Dave, is this the first time you've been one of the musicians for one of these?
No, we did a strange film that people came to see called Haxan. When was that? That was a year ago or
that
so.
That was about a year ago, around this time.
Around this time, also.
And at the time, that
medieval.
Was the best movie you had seen.
Absolutely. No, that one wasn't.
Definitely, without a doubt, hands down, the strangest silent movie. Might be the strangest movie I've ever played at the theater.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating.
Kind of up there with Eraserhead, only it was made, you know.
In the
25,
early
I think.
20, yeah.
Yeah.
So as a screenwriter and playwright, how do these films hold up? How does this film, Hunchback of Notre Dame,
hold up?
What's your opinion?
Incredibly
of it?
Well, from a writing point of view. A lot of what I do is adaptation from novels, and this one is a very, very good adaptation. The limitations of silent film is that you basically have no dialogue. Or very, very, very little dialogue. And this one manages to get all of the big beats in the novel. People that are familiar with the Disney animated Hunchback from the 1990s, would and if they see this is much, much closer to Hugo's novel, much closer to the spirit of the novel, much closer, in fact, to the plot and the characters of the novel, which is to say it's pretty dark. And also really lovely. I mean, it's a, you know, it's one of those monster Beauty and the Beast romances, kind of, which Chaney was very interested in. It's just spectacular. I mean, they rebuild medieval Paris, including a full-size, full-scale Notre Dame, which Chaney climbs down the face of in
freestyle,
and one of the most astonishing things, in character with the hunch on his back, swinging from gargoyles, shinning down Ionic columns. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's the stuff that they could get away with before they had things like laws and rules and stuff to keep people from dying.
Screen Actors Guild.
Really made for some incredible
filmmaking.
Exactly.
And of course, this was also done really before they had, you know, things like crane shots and big dolly platforms and all these things.
Blue screens.
And certainly blue screens.
No blue screens.
Yeah, so just the feat of making the film is kind of beyond scope.
Okay, so don't boo me out of the studio, you two, but like Lou Chaney, right?
Is that his
name?
Lon Chaney. He is an icon, right? So
yeah.
Tell me about him. I mean, like, I know the name, obviously, as Lou, but it's
Len. The rest of the world knows him as Lon. You know what? You said you call whatever the hell you want.
I want to respect him. So, but he's like an icon.
Yeah, he started out actually as a stagehand in the theater with his brother. He got him a job in New York and began doing makeup. And he found that he enjoyed doing makeup and he was good at it. He was very interested in it. And not very many people were doing the kind of extreme stuff he was doing. And he actually got booted out of the theater, the proper theater, and they said, there's no room for someone like you here. You need to go work in the movies with the degenerates. And so he did, and he went to California, and he started as a makeup man, and then began he basically made himself indispensable by creating makeup on himself so that they had to put him into the films. And he did a lot of sort of side background work, and he would send pictures to his brother of movies that he was in. Like, that's, he would have to circle himself because he was unrecognizable. Like, that's me in the back. And then his big breakthrough was...
it was with Browning, wasn't it?
It was, no, I think it was before
Browning. Was it before Browning?
Yeah, but he basically created this niche of doing these very strange, kind of dark characters, always in heavy makeup, but also, oh, he started off as heavies. He started off doing gangster movies as being the heavy all the time, so he'd always have a scar or half an eye or some crazy thing. And he was just a very, very talented actor. And then when he hooked up with Browning, with Todd Browning, who, of course, made Dracula, the two of them just skyrocketed and did Freaks was their biggest film, of course, but a number of silent films before that. And he was one of the biggest box office draws, certainly in the late silent era, not too much into... a bit into the talkies.
Yeah, a little bit.
But he was a huge.
But his son, of course, Lon Chaney
yeah.
Jr., was around for
The Wolfman.
For a
but he was also a bit of he was a recluse. He didn't go for big fame and wasn't necessarily interested in that.
Didn't take the Hollywood program.
People probably wouldn't have recognized him on the street. A lot of people
mm-hmm.
wouldn't. He was so. And most people probably know him for a film he did 2 years after Hunchback, which is Phantom of the Opera.
Mm.
Which that, had, in a way, even more extreme
yeah,
makeup.
That catapulted him. He was the hottest thing around at that point.
Yeah. You guys are like film encyclopedias.
Colette.
That was amazing.
So, if you watch YouTube videos a lot.
Oh,
but
there you go.
The prosthetics that he has in this one, he's got one eye missing, which he really did it half blind. He's got his body is obviously deformed, and then his head is somehow sort of deformed.
I just saw a thing on it. He had ropes that he tied that went from a harness on his back to around his knees, and he would tighten it so he would force himself he could not physically stand up.
Wow.
And so
when
he's doing those stunts and hanging down, he was actually in a great deal of physical pain for most of the filming because of...
It's like the opposite of the rack.
Right.
And there was actually a torture... We were at the Tower of London like 2 years ago, and there was actually something, but I forgot what the name of it, but it did that. It
crushed you.
Whatever,
yeah.
We digress. But anyway... Colette Costa,
yeah.
Dave Hunsaker, thank you so much for coming in. They're here talking about The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It is tomorrow night at what time?
Tomorrow 7,
Goldtown
Sunday
Nick.
At 5 and 7:30. Tickets are online at goldtownnick.com or come by the box office. And it's really going to be tremendous. Can't recommend it enough.
And here's a little tease of the music that you could expect. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
That was music for the Not-So-Silent film series. Tomorrow night, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Dave Hunsaker was just here. He and four other musicians and a big bell will be playing live music during that. Check it out.
It'll be cool.
Goldtown Nick. Nancy Ducharney is here. She is here to chat about Arts Up.
There's a lot of things going on. Well, that's a surprise.
Okay, well done. Thanks for listening.
Right. Okay.
Yes, okay. Well, Klan Conference is going on right now over at Centennial Hall, and they have lots of interesting things. I happen to overhear there's going to be an octopus making bag workshop and stuff like that. So check it out. I think that you can drop in down there, and there's a charge to get in, but, you know, it's worth checking out. So
wow.
That's going to be going on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. There is Abby Oki karaoke and stuff like that tonight, and Terry Tibbett at the Alaskan, karaoke's out at McGivney's. We have Halloween parties at Bin Yang.
Let's talk about those.
If you're not doing one in your own home, there's the Halloween party with a haunted house at the Canvas from 2 to 9:30 p.m.
When, Friday or Saturday?
Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Halloween skate over at the Treadwell Arena from 6:30 to 8:30 on
like
Friday
skating
night.
Skating isn't hard enough. You have
yeah,
to do it
scary again. Enough. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, by the time I got done, I'd certainly look like a mess. There's a manic Halloween party at McGivney's on that from 10 o'clock to 2 a.m. On Halloween itself, there's a bunch of nice drawing things and art things going on at the Canvas. Check out their schedule because they really do have many, many exciting things. They've got watercolor with Avril Valise and just a whole bunch of fun stuff. Get out of your rut.
Yeah,
yeah, time to do something. A Halloween horror story. What if your freezer fails? It's at the Juneau Public Library, and it's something that I think the Cooperative Extension is doing. Let's not think about that. That's at 12:30 to 2. Let's see. We've got the Douglas Ghost Walk at Mount Jumbo Gym on Halloween from 4:30 to 6:30 for the kids. And I think that now kids can trick-or-treat in Douglas. That didn't used to be the case.
No, it didn't. When we lived there, it was not the case. And also, we've got this
tribute. Downtown, yes, that's happening. Very exciting stuff all over the place. And I also...
Wait, we didn't talk about it. We just agreed on it. So it's the trick-or-treat downtown, Stewart and Front Street in Franklin.
Yeah.
Franklin Stein. From 2 to 6, the participating shops downtown are open. Come on by. There's going to be candy and all different types of door prizes and things like that at all the different stores.
Which reminds me that I forgot to bring over the schedule of the last Friday events that are happening out in the Valley. A whole bunch of Valley stores, and I think you can get that list from us. I just forgot to bring it with me. Are going to start having last Fridays. The way we have first Fridays downtown, we now have last Fridays out in the Valley. There's going to be, I don't know, Roswick Giles will be giving away a ukulele. They have a little passport.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go to each one of the places, you can get them stamped, and then people will be having prizes and stuff like that. So it's just an opportunity to go out and find out what's going on in the Valley stores. And there's new ones and the things that you maybe didn't know were out there. So that's on Friday night. So check that out. Okay, so now we're at Halloween. There's a Halloween ball. Oh, look, Jeff brought it right in. We can go over that in a minute.
Lovely Vanna White, known as
Jeff
Brown, in his clown shoes, yes, and his Alaska shirt.
The Red Onion, Lalette, Raintree Quilting, Juneau Pediatric Dentistry, the Northern Tea House, Freya, which is a brand new store, Alaska Music One, Taku Tatu, Hummingbird Hollow, Checkmate Pawn.
This is the last Friday.
This is all
the
last Friday stuff. The Nugget, Alaskan Outfitters, the Art Department, Wings of Alaska, Lyles and Jensen's Home Furnishings, Alaska Dames and Gents, Suite 907, and the Canton Asian Bistro. A lot of stuff going on. Check it out there. And it's going to run from 5 to 7 mostly. Some of them are 5 to 8. So last Friday. Yeah. Woo-hoo.
All right. Let's go back to the Halloween Ball. Where is that?
The Halloween Ball is the Juneau Lyric Opera is holding that over at the Jack.
Okay.
And Kari and the Wrist Rockets will be playing. So it's going to be lots of fun. They're going to have a costume contest and all sorts of stuff. And then also from 8 until 1:30 a.m., there is a skull party with George and Kuhar and Bridget are playing, and that's at Rockwell Ballroom.
That sounds great.
Yeah, we have lots of stuff to do downtown. On Sunday, there is the Musical Film Fest. There is Sweeney Todd opening. It's a 4 p.m. show. It must be a pay-as-you-count or something.
Oh, it's a preview, because they open next Friday.
Yeah, so it's a preview thing, but you can start getting ready for that.
On Monday, we have a climate action movie series, This Changes Everything. That's at Goldtown Nickelodeon from 7 to 9 p.m.
Elaine Schroeder will be on the show tomorrow.
We'll talk about that,
so tune in for that.
Okay. On Tuesday, we have our twig workshop. It was going to be on Wednesday and Thursday, but the ferry schedule changed, so it's going to be on Tuesday and Wednesday from 5:30 to 9 p.m. at the Jack. Harvey from Gustavus is teaching people how to make twig furniture. So all you need to bring is your own little handsaw and hammer and tape measure and pruners, and he's going to bring all the rest of the stuff. He's been out gathering driftwood, I believe.
Sounds great.
So it'll be lots of fun. There's, as I mentioned, several workshops up at the Canvas using color with Inari Kailanen and stained glass. And on Wednesday at the UAS Rec Center, the making of Never Alone, Native Voices and New Media. That's a free event. There is an old-time music jam at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel at 7 p.m. Again, Sweeney Todd must be there. Another preview on Wednesday. That brings us up to Thursday, so I think we're good.
Yes, it sounds great.
Now, wait a minute. Do we have time to talk about one more little thing?
We do.
Okay. So we have this Letters Aloud thing coming up, and people are sort of, I think, stuck in email land. And so what we're going to do is we're inviting everybody in the community to write some letters. What we would like to have letters about is Meredith in our office is new to Juneau. She just moved here. And write a letter to Meredith and tell her what you like about Juneau and what you think a person who's new to Juneau needs to know in order to survive here or to enjoy their life here. And just send it to us. We don't want email letters. We want actual written letters. If you don't want to, you can come down to the Jack. We have a letter writing station, and you can just write your letter and put it in a box there. We will be picking them out and reading them aloud. Up until the read letters aloud thing happens. And for the letters that have really good information in them, we'll post them. We have a website or a page on our website that's for people who are coming to Juneau, like what's going on in the community. And we will put that there as sort of personal information about what you need to know about now that you've moved to Juneau.
Right. So let's, the letters aloud, that is a Juneau Arts and Humanities show that is coming to town. And professional actors are going to be reading these famous letters.
Andy Warhol and Elvis Presley and Marilyn Monroe and famous people. And there'll be music and videos and all sorts of stuff going. It's a multimedia thing.
So now you're trying to make it local. So that sounds great.
Get people excited about writing letters. And also they will be offering a letter writing workshop at Kindred Post the night before.
Oh.
And they will choose one of the letters from the Kindred Post workshop to read as part of their show that they're going to do on Tuesday the 24th. So, you know, it's just kind of fun to, I like getting letters in the mail. I don't know about you. It's more fun than most of the stuff you get in the mail. So take time to just write a little letter. One page.
I am just loving the idea of Chrissy, the owner of Kindred Post, being the Emily Post of Juneau. I just love that. Okay, we're going to have to wrap up the show.
Okay, we're having too much fun.
No,
sorry,
thank
bye.
You, Nancy. Okay, see you next week. Okay, so it is 2 minutes to the hour. You have been listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.org. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And the weather, rain showers tonight, rain showers tomorrow, numerous rain showers Friday night, decreasing clouds on Halloween, isolated rain showers, and then partly cloudy and cold Saturday night, down to mid-30s. Thank you for listening. Next up, actually, tomorrow, tune in for Andy Klein.